Hello there. This is Pastors of the Roundtable. We are back. This is the Discipleship Podcast of Monroe Missionary Baptist Church, brought to you by Together in Christ, the teaching ministry of MMBC in Monroe, Michigan. We are here this week in April to start a new series through a book. This is the Pastors of the Roundtable Book Club. And we are here. I guess one of the things we should do is start bringing snacks for every book club meeting.
No, we're all dieting.
So, oh, that's right.
Yeah. So no,
that's right. Well, Scott, I already had snacks.
I had my breakfast on the last thing that we recorded.
What flavor was that?
Apple cinnamon oats.
Was it good?
Apple cinnamon overnight oats. It was fantastic. It's very filling.
I saw they very have healthy. This is probably not very healthy, but they have like a bananas and cream one or something.
Oh, I'm sure.
A version of the overnight oats.
I made a banana version, a banana like a vanilla version, and I didn't like it as much. Because you mush up the banana, and it makes it, like, really, really goopy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it just, the texture.
There was also, like, blueberry lemon ones.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds
I'm a big fan of those flavors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so, Scott, we are going through a book called The Compelling Community, Where God's Power Makes a Church Attractive, co-written between Mark Dever and Jamie Dunlop. This is a Nine Marks book. I'm assuming, Scott, do you want to tell people where they could get the book if they were interested in following along with the podcast? You don't have to, but...
I mean, anywhere that you could...
Anywhere where good books are sold.
Yeah, anywhere where good books are sold. I mean, Amazon sells a lot of good books. You can find it there. There's also a website called 10 of Those that people could check out that a lot of times you can get books pretty cheap there. You can check that out.
This is a Crossway publication.
Yep.
So they could go to crossway.com, too.
Yep, and I think it was published in 2015. If I remember right. Yep, 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Scott, you're the man this time.
I'm the man.
Go ahead. Take over.
Yeah, so this is a book that we wanted to read through ourselves and just thought that it'd be helpful to have conversations about it along the way. And so just reading a chapter and then talking through it together. When I had first seen this book, I didn't really know what I thought about it. You know, the subtitle that you read there, Spencer, where God's power makes a church attractive. That kind of puts red flags up for me, usually, when I see that word attractive paired with church. Because we've seen a lot of churches that have, like, what you would call an attractional type model, right? Where the whole purpose is we want to attract people here. So that they will come, and when they come, by the things that we've attracted them with, we will kind of get them with the gospel.
It's a bait and switch.
Yeah, kind of like a bait and switch, right? And so that's normally what those two words paired together mean, is like an attractive church to people. Make it, you know, I've heard, I don't know if you guys have heard this phrase, but I don't know if Andy Stanley used this phrase or not, but make it a church that unchurched people want to go to. Is that something he said, or I've heard that before?
Oh yeah, he would say that for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people think of when they think of an attractive church to people. But that's not the point of what this book is trying to get across necessarily, at least in the way that we normally see that, I think. And so, but they're talking about how the community of a church is attractive to the world around it when that community is supernaturally created by God instead of manufactured by humanity and our pragmatic mindset and thinking. There's something, I guess, to start off, what I thought would be helpful for us to think through in this, in our first podcast episode here, is just to try to understand what is community in the life of the local church. Like, what does that mean when we talk about community within the church? And so, you know, you guys have read through these first couple chapters of the book. What do you, like, when we talk about community in the church, what are we talking about? Or community in general. It doesn't have to be specifically church at first.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a sense of being together, of wanting to be together. What we'll talk about today, and he fleshes out, is what you're together around. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But this sense of belonging, that people care, about you. You know, you're not an outsider, but you're part of this community. You're here. We want to hear from you. We want to be with you. We want to see you. And we want to see each other, right? We want to be together. Community, though, can involve like a cause, like we're here for community for this or to do that or to help with this. And so in general, community should evoke good feelings in people's mind, right? Not a negative connotation, but a positive connotation of it's good to be a part of the community.
Yeah, what were you going to say, Spencer?
I was thinking about just the word even. I mean, we think about the word commune, right? Like what's a commune is a place where people live together. But the idea of community is has the idea of common.
I don't think about commune ever.
You don't ever think about a commune?
We have
not
one
here. Really.
We have an. Is that that's basically what a nunnery is?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's in your Mormon side. You think about a commune a lot.
Yeah.
I when you're visiting their temples and stuff, like you like to do.
Okay, we'll talk about that later because you brought it up. So I'm going to push for it again. You don't want to go golfing? I'll take you to the first temple because, like, John the Baptist showed up there.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Okay. The first temple?
The first Mormon temple.
That was the first?
Yes.
I didn't know it was the first.
First one they ever built.
I'm a little more interested in visiting now.
And it's where?
It's, what's the city? Isn't this horrible? I cannot remember the town where it's called. No.
Oh, too bad.
No, it's outside of Cleveland. Okay, I will remember it. You caught me on a bad day.
Sorry.
No, the idea, though, is what we hold in common. It's built around something that is shared. So we think about even like the Village Commons area, right? Was a common space for the whole community to share, right? No one technically owned that land. It was a commonly shared space. Or you have a commons in a building or a university campus. It's intended to be a place where, regardless of what your major is or where you're coming from, it's where everybody, all these people share this space. So community is always built around something that is shared. There's something that everybody in the community holds in common despite all their differences. And so a community can be built around different things. You can have a community that's built around, sports clubs.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Where, what I mean by that, I mean fan clubs, right? Where some people like, there's official clubs for like, you know, like maybe an NFL team or a Premier League team in soccer in England. And those people are of various ages, various maybe nationalities, ethnicities, but they're bound together. They have something in common. They all root for the common team, and they wear those jerseys.
So, I think you can even see that informally in like a different example of like, you know, if your child plays on a sport team and you go to their practices or you go to their games,
right,
and you go to a lot of them, like you see the same people kind of over and over and over again. You build a relationship with those people.
Yeah.
But really, what is it that you have in common with them? It's not, you might not have been friends with those people had your children not played on the same team.
Right.
And so not even on purpose, community is kind of created around that, you know, in an informal way.
We're all part of different communities. All of us have various, like I'm, you know, like Tim is a part of the MMBC community. He's a part of the Erie Mason community because of different things you share in common with other people. And those communities sometimes overlap and sometimes they don't overlap. And to just depending on what you share with each of those different people. And that's why we call our neighborhood a community, because we at least share the same geographic location. So community is always built around something that you have in common.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so you share it in common. But I think for the purposes of our book, what we're really looking at and thinking through here is the relationships that exist between people. And whatever it is that you share in common, that is what it is that connects you to those people. And your relationship with them is formed around and what kind of feeds it. And so there's a quote here just about the nature of community in the church that I wanted to read from our book. The authors say that we have our own endangered species to protect, the community of the local church, and we know how important it is. Community makes people feel included. When people feel included, they stay and volunteer and give. When they don't feel included, they leave. So the growth of our churches and the apparent success of our ministries depend on effective community. So my question is, not even necessarily like that that's what we need to think, but I just want to ask, like, do you guys agree with that? You know, they seem, this quotation in context, you know, Dever and Dunlop kind of just breeze past that and assume that that's true. They don't really argue for that necessarily. They just state it as like, this is a fact. And so I just think that's a pretty big statement to make, to elevate, to say that the success of our churches and our ministries are built upon the community of the church. I just thought that was a big statement that we needed to kind of hash out and see like what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I would agree in that, in the sense that it's the commitment level, but why are we committed? We're committed because of why we're together, which is because of Christ and what he has done for us. We are in Christ, and he has placed us here to be a community or a family here at this church, or whoever's listening to their church, whatever it is. And that has been eroded. I listened to a podcast yesterday on a new book that is out called, it's a book on the de-churched. And looking at the
it's not about Detroit.
No, yeah. No.
The D church, yeah, but the yeah. DE church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And just talking about those who have left, and we've seen that, and their argument is that we're in one of the biggest religious shifts ever, the biggest religious shift ever in America, where people have left and are still leaving the church. And what they found in their findings is a lot of people have left saying they believe Jesus Christ is Lord. They would be an Orthodox Christian. They would answer like the Apostles' Creed and Nicene Creed. They would say yes to all of that stuff. But there's just an aspect of like the church community that they've left, and they don't always even have a good answer for it. They didn't leave because they were mad or anything. It was just, it could be COVID. It could have been other things, moving. There was a lot of different things. But they've found their community in other areas. Mm-hmm. That isn't centered on Christ. It's centered on, like we had talked about, like a sports or schools or hobbies, whatever, or their neighborhood, you know.
Yeah.
And so that is what their community is, and they feel satisfied with that community plus their personal relationship with the Lord. And so I think there needs to be a better understanding in churches of what we mean when we say we are a community and a family. What are we centered on? And people understand it's not centered on the pastors or even the people necessarily. It's centered on what Christ has done for us and has brought us together to be community. We are family in him. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, I would definitely agree on what they're saying. There's definitely some things I question in the book as we go on, which would lead me to say that I don't disagree with this, but I would have questions as to what they mean it. But
mm-hmm. I think it's important that we interact with the book critically as well, mm-hmm. right? And tease things out, because something that as I read this along, I was like, we kind of need to tease that out a little bit, or think about that mm-hmm. some, because a lot of this doesn't apply as a one-to-one scenario. But you know, I think you're right, Tim, in that sense, in community. And that's really what they're arguing for, is that the community of the church is centered around Christ and the commonality that we have in Christ. What they say in that quote of just of how important community is to the church, when they say it, when people feel, or community makes people feel included. It's this idea of belonging. Do I belong here with these people? And normally the way that we think about that in the world is we try to answer that question by asking, well, what do I have in common with these people? And at times, the way the world works is to try to point out, look at all these things you have in common. You have a young family, right? Or you have children, or you are a teenager, or you're a man, you're a woman. Well, look at all of these things. We have other people here who are just like you, who have similar jobs as you do, or similar experiences or hobbies as you do. So find your community here. But what you're not pointing to help people see what they hold in common with the other people in the church is their relationship with Christ, which that is the only kind of unique community that the church can offer to people. you can find all of those commonalities in different places other than the church. And let's be honest, you can probably find it better than what the church can try to manufacture and provide. You know, Spencer, you look like you're.
I'm just thinking.
Okay, I thought you'd look something up and wanted to say it, but that's really the whole kind of point of this first chapter, is to show that churches, by and large, in a lot of our culture today, have tried to build the community of their church around what the authors call gospel plus community. Churches for sure recognize, yeah, of course, what we have in common is Christ. But look at all these other things that we have in common too. And let's build our church, let's build our ministries around those things to help people feel connected to each other. And the problem with that, that the authors are pointing out, is that that is a kind of community that can exist even if God does not. Even if the gospel wasn't true, you could still be friends with that person. But what they're really advocating for is what they call a gospel-revealing community, which is this friendship, these relationships. You people here are so different from each other. The only thing really connecting you together is the fact that you are both in Christ.
I say this is where I start to have my critique, that I really struggle with it, because churches, so it needs to be said, the people writing this book are in Washington, D.C., which is a place where people move to and has a ton of people from different places there.
It's extremely diverse.
Big time.
And transient.
Yes, yeah. Big time, okay? So I think to say the gospel revealing thing is easy in Washington, D.C., than it is at a place where people are born and raised and die at, and really only people leave. You don't have a ton who come in. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, new people who move to the area.
Yeah. And so, like here where we are in Monroe, we have people who come here, some, but it's not a ton. Mm-hmm. It's not a ton all the time. It used to be 50, 60, 70 years ago, but not as much anymore.
Yeah.
And so to say to our church, hey, the only thing that brings any of us together here, the only reason that any of us get along here is because of Jesus and what he's done. We're just so vastly different. It's just Jesus. That's never going to happen here. Mm-hmm. Never. That's impossible. And so when I read that, I didn't think so much about me, but I think about, you know, the pastor up north or in Montana, you know, or in these different places who reads this book and just thinks, I'm failing. I won't have that. My church is half my family. And then it's, you know, and then it's my neighbor who I hunt with. And then it's, you know, and they start, I could see that being weighty to be like, I don't have that. And so are we really here just because of the gospel? Or are we here just more of convenience and likes? Mm-hmm. And so that would be my little bit of pushback, because I think that could be thrown on us here at Monroe. You know, I would hope we're a church because of Christ and what he's done. We say that stuff all the time, but there's plenty of people here that I would have community with, probably even outside of Christ, because of where I live.
Sure.
And they live here too.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, I think that's a very fair critique.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing, reading through it, of how fair is that to say? Mm-hmm. But I do think that the authors give some really important caveats, in that. And so, like, I had even written down, you know, that, it's on page 27, where he says, does this mean that we should flee any relationship where we share Christ plus something else?
Right.
No. Yeah. God uses our sociological affinities. Mm-hmm. Every church has a certain culture, a certain feel, a certain majority. It would be dishonest to suggest otherwise, to say that a congregation shares nothing in common but Christ. I read that sentence wrong, but I think you get the point. Like is attracted to like, and that's a natural reality. There's nothing inherently wrong with people's comfort with the familiar.
Yeah,
and so I think that's an important caveat, because I can see, Tim, what you're saying. Somebody come to this book and say, man, everybody in our church looks the same, dresses the same. We are not doing this right. Well, that might not actually be true. There might be people in your church that work blue-collar jobs, white-collar jobs. If you have old people and young people in your church, those are two totally different kinds of people
that's a big one for me.
That rarely get along together. But if they do in the church, it's not because they love all the same things, right? So there's, I think that diversity of community goes beyond, you know, certain hobbies and certain likes and things like that. It also has to do with your generation and different things. But it, I think your critique is important to remember for sure.
Yeah, I've even thought of it just like in the life of our church, being a bigger church for our area, and to be more in number, that makes it, it doesn't, I don't think it's possible really in our church to know everybody and to be close, what we would say in community, this tight bond with everybody. Mm-hmm. It's just too big and too broad. Yeah,
no joke. There was this past Wednesday night, Alicia told me this story. There was a lady who started coming to the women's Bible study that happens on Wednesday night. And she started coming because she works with a lady who comes to our church. Her friend has been coming to our church for more than 7 weeks. So 7 weeks consecutively. And then, you know, she's sharing with her friend, yeah, I found this new church in the area. I've been going to that. She tells her the name of the church. She's like, that's my church. I've been there the last 7 weeks. So you can come here for 7 weeks and not see somebody.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they get, you know, you could say they get missed, or just like there's a lot of people here.
Yeah.
We have two main entrances, mm-hmm. you know, so like if you come in on one side, they come on the other side. You're right. Like a church our big, you're not going to know everybody who's
yeah.
here.
Yeah. And so I don't want people to feel bad as we go through this book, you know, thinking oh, I'm not really in the community because I don't know everybody. I'm not greeting yeah. everybody. I don't think that's going to be the case. There's going to be natural plus communities within this building.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we have ladies who do crafts, and they meet together on Tuesdays, and that's okay. And they're probably going to sit by each other at church, and they have a community, and that's great. There's nothing wrong with that, right? We have all different kinds of groups. People of the same age usually are going to kind of, or in the same station in life, kind of like having young kids or having teenagers or whatever. You just naturally kind of blend together. And I guess I want to make the point to say that's okay. That's good. And I'm glad they give that caveat because of that kind of stuff. Like, I don't need to feel bad that I feel more comfortable with the dad who has some kids the same age as my kids. I don't need to feel bad that I like to hang out with the guys who like to go hunting or like to golf or mm-hmm. like, you know, do those types of things that I enjoy, yep. that I enjoy doing.
Or go to Mormon temples.
Yep, that group.
Even though those people are really weird, we still love them.
But that being said, when we gather together on Sunday morning as everybody, and we do something such as the Lord's Supper together, which I believe we're doing this coming Sunday.
Yes.
I think we need to be united in the gospel and see everybody in that room as brothers and sisters who God has brought together, and we care about each other. And I would be willing, though, to serve them in any way that I can.
Mm-hmm.
I might not need to because there might be others who are doing that, which is great. But if I can, and I need to, I want to, and it's not centered on how close I am to them. It's, no, we're part of the same church family, and God saved you, and he saved me, and I love you because of that, right? Mm-hmm. That's the importance in this.
Yeah, and so with what you're saying, I guess the question is, like, because I totally agree with what you're saying, that even within the church, when you get a church that says, you know, we don't have a giant church, but
no, right.
with, you know, a church that's our size, where there's several hundred people who are here, you know, on a Sunday morning, you're naturally going to develop relationships with people that you have similarities with. That's going to naturally happen,
mm-hmm.
and you don't necessarily have to be ashamed of that, but one of the questions that's asked in the book that I think is helps me think through this is, would I have a relationship with this person even if we didn't go to church together? And if those are the only people in my church that I have a relationship with, is that wrong? Like, is that just somehow lacking in a way of like what the community of the church is supposed to be? I don't know if I'm asking this very well, but
yeah, you have the question on here. How many of your friendships at church would likely exist even if you weren't a Christian?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
That's a better way to ask it. Like, if you weren't a Christian, would you have just as a good relationship with this person as you would otherwise?
Yeah, I think that's a good question to ask. Yeah, I would hope the answer would be no. You know, I try to think of like my life, like Spencer had mentioned, having the different communities, which you guys have as well. And so having friendships outside the church, but then I do have friendships inside the church that overcross the other community as well. Mm-hmm. And my relationship personally is deeper with the ones that overcross because of Christ. And, you know, there's that bond and that commonality, for sure. And so I guess if it was the other way around, that's where the problem would be.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It's
the question is asking.
Yeah, I guess the way to think about it is trying to think of this is like where I should have like prepped and like tried to write this down, but it was just came.
Sorry, you haven't done this in a while, Scott.
No, I haven't. You're right. I'm not as experienced in this as you are, Spencer. Yeah, but how can I know? Like, ask myself the question: when do I know that my relationship with this person here at church is based on the commonality that we have in Christ more than the worldly things that we share in common with one another? Like, when am I in danger of that, you know, overtaking the commonality we have in Christ?
Yeah,
if that's a fair question.
I think
ask.
For me, it would be more even in the conversation and in the bond, right? Is not all your conversation is centered on Christ, right? But there is that aspect there and that concern there. And it is hard, I think, because as Christians, just because the person we're friends with isn't a Christian doesn't mean we don't talk about Christ with them. Doesn't mean that we don't say, hey.
I think you actually should talk about Christ with him.
Yeah. Right? Or because I was thinking like if I'm sitting in the stands with a church member here, but we're not here. We're at a sporting event that both of our kids are a part of. The conversation is going to be all over the map. Some of it will be about church. Some of it might even get spiritual, mm-hmm. or even, yeah, you know, so-and-so's grandma's sick and, you know, lift them up to the Lord. Yeah, oh, yeah, I'd be happy to do that. You know, oh, how is this going in your life? Those conversations. But a lot of times, though, it's the same type of conversation I feel with the non-Christian in the same thing. But there's an understanding. I have an understanding that we're not bonded like I am with the other person I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very different thought process in my head in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I might be intentionally asking them, how are you doing? And when they just do the sugar-coated answer, maybe I'm being a little more pointed with the non-Christian at times of saying, oh, yeah, I heard, you know, that your mom isn't doing, how is your mom actually doing? Is there anything I can do? Like, I still would have that conversation with them, but that it's more evangelistic,
mm-hmm.
more out of, I don't want to say it's a fake concern. It is a concern. I don't know if you guys can help me with what I'm trying to say, but with the brother or sister in the Lord who I'm sitting with in the stands, who I know we go to church together and we're hearing the same preaching and we're singing the same songs and we're doing a lot of this together, there's a different relational aspect there than there definitely is with the non-Christian who I don't have that with.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what we're talking about.
And yeah.
It's not even something that's easy to put into words.
Yeah.
But there is definitely a different kind of bond that you share with that person, you mm-hmm. know? And yeah, Spencer, you're writing all kinds of notes down over there.
It's more about you, though, and how you're doing. He's taking notes as the normal host.
Yeah. Work on this.
He's giving me tips.
Yeah, he's giving you tips.
No, one of the things that's come to my mind, and I think this, I don't know if they said this in the book, but I think they would totally agree with it.
Why did you not read it?
I have highlighted it, Tim. I read it.
Well, I could highlight it.
Spencer read it like 2 weeks early.
Yeah, I was excited.
Yeah. No.
But I do think one of the things that's important to step back and consider is that community is inevitable. You will share stuff in common.
It's like Thanos.
Yeah, it's inevitable. Your biological family is a community,
mm-hmm.
and it's shared by biological ties. And so I think what ties a community together is not, and they say this later on, and I appreciate the fact that they say this, that the odd thing is we don't build community by thinking about community.
Yeah.
It's built, and that's where I would say one of the things I think, like, they said here, that quote we read earlier, the growth of our churches, they say so the growth of our churches and the apparent success of our ministries depend on effective community. I would say, I understand what they're saying. On the one hand, though, I would say every community is going to be effective. The question is, I would say it might even be better to say the growth of our churches and the apparent success of our ministries depend on the object of our community.
Yeah, because that's a good thing, because the people who I'm getting close with at the school, or the people I'm getting close with at my kids' functions or whatever it might be, I don't get a sense from them that they feel they're missing out on community. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't look at me and say, man, you have community that I wish I had.
Right.
They actually seem to love each other. They make meals for each other. They pick up each other's kids. They vacation together. They do all kinds of stuff together, and they seem to really love each other and want to be around each other.
Yeah.
And so they're not missing community, because I remember, like, growing up, I would hear things like, if you live the Christian faith, people are going to want it. They're going to see it, and they're going to want it. And I think a lot of them live just like I do. They do care about each other.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right.
It's just the drastic thing that's missing in their life is the supernatural work of Christ
to
help them see their sin and save them of their sin.
And what you're saying, Tim, is exactly the point that they're bringing up in the book.
That's why I said it.
Good.
To show you I read it.
Not good.
I read it,
I'm
Scott.
So proud of you, Tim. We're going to make a reader out of this man.
Tim said at the very beginning, he's like, I don't have to read this part. It's like the introduction. He's like, this part, you can skip that.
Skip this, skip but that part.
Tim, what you're saying is exactly the point. The people, and that's why, like, the study or that podcast that you referenced of people stepping away from the church is because they've found community. Mm-hmm. The challenge to the church is not, and what this book is not about, is how do we create community in the church? Mm-hmm. Because people can find community all kinds of places, probably done better. What makes the community of the church compelling, that's why they titled it this, is that the people who are part of it share so little in common sometimes. Mm-hmm. To look and to see the kind of love and compassion and care and concern for people that you share nothing else in common with or that are very different from you, that is the kind of community that people look at and are baffled by, because they say, what is it that's bringing you together with this person? Like, what has connected you? You share nothing worldly in common with them. You're totally different generation. You have totally different jobs. You have totally different hobbies. So why do you care about that person? And that's, I think, the point that they're making, is that that kind of community that's created by the gospel and Christ in their life, that is what I think the world will look at and say, I don't understand how you two can be in the same church, can love each other, but you clearly do, and I don't understand why.
And that ultimately goes back to the object.
Yes.
Because Jesus, in some ways too, we could say where God's power makes a church attractive, but on the other hand, the church isn't so much the attraction, it's the attracted. We have been attracted. Jesus says, when I am exalted, when I am lifted up, I will draw. I will attract.
I draw all people to myself.
I will haul them to me. Mm-hmm. And the Father, he says, will draw, will bring them to myself. And we could use the magnet picture as a helpful image, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen. And God does that through his church on this earth. And so the thing that makes the church community and draws people in is Jesus himself. And that's where, like what they say, if you make a gospel plus community, and you're in, and by that, I don't take them as meaning, like what Tim and we've been talking about. Automatically, we are a gospel in one sense. We are a gospel plus community automatically because we all live in this region. That's why we go to this church. Mm-hmm. But that's not what they're saying. But if we become if the object of the community and the thing that attracts people to this church is Jesus plus something, it's no longer Jesus. Mm-hmm. Because Jesus tells us the gospel is, if you add anything to me or take anything from me, you don't have me anymore. Mm-hmm. You've got a false Jesus. Mm-hmm. So what our job is as pastors and as a church is to make sure that we are always gathered around him. That's why I was looking here earlier, Ephesians, right? We have one body, one spirit, one hope, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all. That is what we share in common. And as that object is put up, that is what makes the church attractive, because then his love changes our love for each other and for them. Mm-hmm. And so, and but ultimately, it's still always the object of the community doing that. It's Jesus.
I think it's important too to remember that it. You're exactly right, and that's what he. That's what they talk about in the next chapter. But the way that that gets like the way that the object gets presented to people is in the way that the people who are already part of the community are living together and sure. loving one another, and so that. That the love that, and that's, this is getting to the next chapter, so we could probably bring this to a close here soon, but the love that, that those who are in the community share for mm-hmm. the object results in a shared love for one another.
Yeah.
It's both horizontal and vertical.
Correct.
Because you cannot love God and not love your brother, 1 John says. And so, so I think like that, the way that the community is living, treating one another, acting one another, actually does put the object on display
right.
for them to see.
And the counterintuitive thing here is exactly what they say, though, is because whenever so often in church life today, we have noticed, we perhaps have looked at our churches or our communities and said, well, we're lacking in this. Why are people not caring about each other? Mm-hmm. And it's not because we think, well, maybe we've given the wrong object of community. It's that we try to manufacture.
Yeah.
And what that does is that's actually, I mean, going back to law and gospel stuff, that's all law. Because law can't create community. You're trying to tell people to do things in order to create community, and it can't do it. It's impossible. The only thing that can create community is Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. his blood.
Well, the law can create community. It's just not a supernatural community.
Well, it creates communities but those are always communities that are divided, right? That's what Paul says earlier in Ephesians 2. When the law came, it even divided Jew and Gentile. And the law also divides me from you because mm-hmm. I sit there and look and judge you.
Yeah.
It's just like what Tim preached about 1 Corinthians last night. What do we start doing? We start thinking we're the role of the judge. And what actually starts happening is we put each other on a hierarchy.
Yeah, no, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just pointing out that what you're saying, people do that because it works. It works in the sense of it shows numbers. It's attractive. It shows like
it's like the Little Rascals. You guys ever seen that show?
Yeah,
they have the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
Yes,
what's their rule? No girls.
Yeah,
but then there's a fracture because one of them starts to like a girl.
Yeah,
messes everything up.
That's a problem.
It?
He even starts dressing like a girl. Yeah, my kids love that movie. They think it's so funny. Yeah, but that's like what you're saying, yeah. Spencer, is very true. We go to that because. In a pragmatic sense, it works. It's easy to draw a crowd with community that is built around those external things, mm-hmm. even if they're Christianized sure. external things. Sure.
Did you guys read the last question?
That I put down
are your
here?
Goals?
Yeah. We haven't read it out loud. Do you want to read it?
Yeah. I think this is a good—I don't want to jump too far ahead, though. I don't want to mess with other episodes of this that we do. But are your goals and targets for nurturing community in the local church consistent with something that only God can create? Or do they push you to gospel plus community that people can manufacture on their own? I think that's a good question for us to think about and maybe talk about. Like, why do we do chili cook-off? We have a cornhole tournament coming up in June. We have... we're doing something new here in a couple weeks that I'm actually really excited about. I hope people come to it. Is we're doing a couples trivia night mm-hmm. that I think will be really fun.
Yeah.
The youth did a quote unquote, what was it called? Glover night.
Thank you. Gosh, you remembered it.
oh, boy.
Are we being gospel plus in doing this?
Mm.
I think that's something that our people would ask.
Sure.
And something that we should try to maybe answer.
Yeah. Now that's a great question. And that's something that, I mean, honestly, all of us should be thinking about as we're reading through this book. Cause it seems, I think on the surface that they're condemning a church that's doing that. But I think they say in a few places that that's not what they think at all. Like, I mean, I know that their church has, they have small groups. They have a youth group at their church. They have Sunday school classes. But I think, like, the way that I've tried to think through that question, Tim, is if all we did as a church, let's say that this is how our church functioned. We opened the doors to the church 15 minutes before service started. We let people in, and 15 minutes after we closed all the lights off and made everybody leave. And that is literally all our church ever did. Community, even if you are focusing on the object, community is not going to happen because people have no opportunity to meet one another, to get to know each other. There's no space for that to happen. And so the community, the Sunday morning is obviously very important for putting the object on display that we want people to see. And the community, it's like the rallying cry, you know, for that community. But you've got to give people space to build relationships, to get to know each other. And so I think that, you know, the Glover Nighter or the couples dinner that's coming up, or even a women's Bible study or a men's fish fry on a Saturday, you know, afternoon or something. Those are all opportunities for people to see each other, to get to know each other, and start to build that community. Give them opportunities mm-hmm. for that. Does that make that's the way I think through that question?
Yeah, I think
about it when you think about the community of the family. Right, we even in our families, let's do an expanded family, like a grandparent, like a, you got the grandparents and the extended families all there. You might do, you know, even for your family, you might do an Easter egg hunt, and you're typically going to have that for the younger ones. But no one thinks that by having that Easter egg hunt as part of your family for the young ones, that you're thereby saying, well, obviously our family's not bound together by a common biological tie. Right.
It's
no,
just this egg hunt, yeah.
It's just it's understanding that within our community there is diversity and it's okay to minister to the diversity. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, think about the church. The church, we are one worldwide in the sense of spiritual unity, but we also have to particularize that one unity within a specific context, mm-hmm. and that's okay.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's we do that even ethnically and racially in a sense of our cultures. And so I don't see that as – I see that also as a subdivision of ministering to children or older people or men, women, whatever. We're still having the shared object, but we're just particularizing that ministry within a specific being honest about the reality of the diversity within the community.
Yeah, and there's a whole different that applies very much so whenever you're thinking about – when you're thinking about the fact that you're not doing ministry in a vacuum, you know, we came into a church that has done ministry a certain way for decades, right? And so that's what people know. And that's oftentimes the only way they think that that can happen. And so if a church, not to say that this is true of our church, it's true of many churches, where the way that community has been thought of is by forming it around the gospel plus. It takes a long time to help them see that, no, you can actually have a lot in common with somebody that you have nothing in common with. The most important thing in common, which is Christ. So, but if we continue talking, we're going to get into the content of the next chapter. So I think that this is a good place for us to stop, and we will talk to you guys next week. As Spencer alluded to at the beginning of this podcast, if you want to get this book, you can find it on Amazon or try 10 of those or one of those other bookstores that you can find this book. Get it, and it's not a difficult read. There's also a study guide that goes along with it. We're not necessarily using the study guide. I'm glancing through it as we prepare these discussions, but the study guide might be a helpful tool for you to think through it as well. And so I want to encourage you guys to follow along, and hopefully these will continue to be edifying to you.